Charles III has crowned the British monarch amid protests calling for an end to the monarchy in the UK. EU leaders approve 1 billion euros in new military aid for Ukraine, despite worsening financial hardship for citizens in their own countries. And Israeli forces raid a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank city of Tokhon, fatally shooting 2 young Palestinian men. Hello and welcome from Tehran. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Appreciate you being with us. First story takes us to London this hour, where King Charles III has ascended the UK throne in a ceremony held in the British capital. The coronation has been overshadowed by repeated calls to ditch the monarchy, as well as growing apathy against the royals, particularly among the younger generation. A car bomb explosion injures a prominent Russian nationalist writer in a village east of Moscow. Reports say Zakhar Prilepin, 47, suffered minor fractures, but the explosive device that had been planted under his car killed the driver. Russia has opened a criminal case into the attack, sending investigators to the scene. Meanwhile, the foreign ministry has blamed the U.S. and Britain for what it calls the terrorist attack. This is the second high-profile incident in Russia in less than a week, described by Moscow as a terrorist act. The bombing came just days after 2 explosions rocked the Kremlin. Moscow claimed it was a U.S.-directed Ukrainian assassination attempt on Vladimir Putin. Both Washington and Kiev have denied having any part in the episode. EU leaders sign off on a 1 billion euro ammunition package for Ukraine on Friday, despite growing financial hardship for citizens throughout the 27-country bloc. A 7th consecutive hike in interest rates has been confirmed by the European Central Bank. John Hughes brings us more from Brussels.
Millions of struggling homeowners with tracker mortgages will soon start paying back even more following a decision by the European Central Bank to increase interest rates by 0.25%.
We have covered a lot of ground in the last 9 months, right? Moving from minus 50 basis points to plus 300 basis points. We are continuing this hiking process.
Rents are going up as landlords with mortgages pass on the costs. The aim is to bring down inflation, but disgruntled unions insist the strategy won't work. It's all linked to energy sanctions against Russia. EU citizens are being financially pummeled. However, the bloc's leaders have just agreed on a huge additional package to arm Ukraine.
So we are talking about 1 billion capacity to upscale our industrial base.
Ordinary people don't see an end in sight to the crippling cost of living crisis.
A person who is employed, he can survive, but just think about a person who is not employed, how it is impacting him.
If we don't have also like kind of a push on the wages, we will not be able to cope with that, and our reserves, our savings, we will go down.
Analysts suggest peace in Ukraine is the answer, but EU authorities say Kiev will be supplied with deadly weapons for as long as it takes.
It is for Ukraine, that is the country that has been attacked, to decide in which conditions it is ready to find peace with Russia.
Employment ministers have been assessing pressures on EU businesses due to high inflation and interest rates. Firms are also struggling to find skilled workers.
26% of companies all over Europe consider that labour shortage are a major difficulty for them.
Economists say because EU leaders have cut off cheap gas and oil flows from Russia, winter 2023 will tell us all we need to know about the bloc's resilience, or lack thereof. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
And now it's time for this hour's news review. In the occupied West Bank, a funeral procession has been held for two young Palestinians killed by Israeli forces on Saturday morning. The two Palestinians, both in their 20s, were fatally shot during the regime's raid on a refugee camp in the city of Tokom. According to local sources, Israeli troops attacked Palestinians at the camp. They also prevented medics from reaching the injured. Now, the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, has reacted, saying the Israeli crime will not go unanswered. The latest violence raises to 110 the total number of Palestinians killed by the regime so far this year. Around 20 of the victims are under 18 years of age. Saturday's killings come amid rising tensions in the occupied territories, where Israel has stepped up its crackdown against Palestinians. I'd like to welcome my guests to this news review. Out of Ramallah, Mona Kandil, and out of Gaza City, Wafal Oveini, Palestinian activist and journalist. Welcome both of you to the program. Mona, I'll start off with you, and if you could fill us in on reaction since exactly what happened and our reaction since that time of this raid on the refugee camp.
We have to mention that both Palestinians who had been killed by the Israeli forces were 22-year-old Samer al-Shafi'i and Hamza Kharyush. Israeli forces raided Nur Shams refugee camp in Tul Kerem. The military issued a statement claiming that they want to arrest Palestinians whom the Israeli military accuses them for being responsible for the shooting that was carried out last Tuesday on the illegal settlement Avne Hevitz near Tul Karim, and led to the injury of an Israeli settler. The military said they wanted to arrest Palestinians. They're responsible for the shooting. Of course, Israeli soldiers raiding this crowded area, a refugee camp, the clashes would take place. And this is what happened. Clashes took place between the Palestinians, residents of the refugee camp, and Israeli forces, led to the shooting of the two Palestinians on a roof of a building. The Israeli forces were surrounding the two Palestinians. They were bleeding, and they left them bleeding. Footage coming from Nur Shams showed a number of Israeli soldiers, and there was a blood on their legs. It seems that there were clashes, it's right, and that they might had been wounded by the fire of the Palestinian fighters. They left them bleeding, the Palestinians, the two Palestinians, and they succumbed to their injuries. They left their bodies, and they left the refugee camp. Hamas movement, of course, said resistance will continue. They vowed to avenge the killing of those two Palestinians, who many were saying that they were members of the Hamas resistance group in the Tul Kerem refugee camp. Palestinian government here in the occupied territories held the Israeli regime full responsibility for the killing of Palestinians and for the consequences. Every time Israeli forces raid Palestinian areas, it doesn't the storming of these areas doesn't end with only arresting people. Clashes take place. People are being wounded and killed in cold blood, assassinated, we can say, as many here are saying. But at the end of the day, resistance groups believe, and they issued numerous statements saying that the only option that had been left for the Palestinians is to continue to be adherent to the choice of resistance, and it's their natural response to fire the Israeli forces and, of course, the armed Israeli settlers who live illegally in the Israeli settlements that were built on Palestinian lands.
Well, Wafa, when we're looking at this situation, why do we see such an escalation? I mean, basically, we're reporting on this every day, at least one more Palestinian being killed. And we see that the Israeli regime just continues to be more aggressive.
Yeah, well, actually, the Israeli atrocity, it becomes like a daily basis. It is really relentless here in the occupied West Bank. You know, because actually the Israeli occupation regime, really they are stuck in a repressive impasse as Palestinian resistance grows up in the occupied West Bank. So they want actually to crack down the resistance in the occupied West Bank by murdering, like, Palestinians who they daily murder them in occupied West Bank. And actually they think that by murdering Palestinians, they think that they can eliminate the resistance in the occupied West Bank. But actually, we as Palestinians here, we can see or we can witness that the resistance grows like every single day. Like every day there is a Palestinian attack on an Israeli occupation checkpoint, especially in the occupied West Bank. So, and even since the occupation of Palestine, they never succeed in eliminating the resistance of Palestinian by murdering the Palestinian freedom fighters and the Palestinian militants.
Well, thank you both for being with me on this news review. Mona Kandu out of Ramallah and Wafa al-Odaini, Palestinian activists and journalists out of Gaza City. And thank you for staying with us for another news review. Continue with other news now this hour. Iran's president condemns the United States' military presence in Syria, saying it is doomed to failure. Ebrahim Raisi made the remarks in an interview with Syria's official news agency, Sana'a. He said Syria will foil a U.S. plan to occupy parts of the Arab country to plunder its wealth. Raisi noted that no foreign military force should be present on Syrian soil, adding that the main concern of the regional countries is the restoration of Syria's sovereignty. The Iranian president returned to Tehran on Friday after a two-day trip to Damascus.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi on Thursday wrapped up his two-day visit to Syria, where he met with his counterpart Bashar al-Assad. The visit was the first by an Iranian president to Syria since the Arab country was gripped by war in 2011. Raisi has called his Syria visit a turning point in bilateral ties.
This trip will be a turning point in Iran-Syria relations and will have an effect on the region and the trade and economic relations of the two countries.
The Iranian and Syrian governments have also issued a joint statement that highlights several points. The two sides have expressed strong determination to cement bilateral relations in different areas, particularly trade and economy. On Wednesday, the first day of his trip, the Iranian president signed a long-term comprehensive strategic cooperation agreement with his Syrian counterpart at the presidential palace in Damascus. Raisi said the long-term agreement will open a new chapter in cordial relations. 14 more documents were signed as well, all aiming to enhance bilateral cooperation. Iran, meanwhile, renewed its readiness to help Syria in its reconstruction efforts following the years-long conflict triggered by foreign-backed militancy. The pledge was made by President Raisi as he made a speech at the Holy Shrine of Hazrat Zainab, the granddaughter of Prophet Muhammad. Raisi also lashed out at the U.S. and Israel for backing terror groups in Syria. Combating terrorism is another issue Iran and Syria put focus on in their joint statement. They've pledged to continue to work together to fight terrorism and extremism until all terror groups are completely wiped out. The statement also denounces the U.S. military presence in Syria as well as its looting of the country's natural resources. It demands the international community to bring an end to the U.S. measures. The Iranian-Syrian statement also denounces Western sanctions imposed on both nations. Meanwhile, it slammed the Israeli regime for its repeated acts of aggression against Syria, saying that Damascus has the right to respond to Tel Aviv's aggression. The statement said that the Israeli aggression is a destabilizing factor in West Asia. Iran has said President Raisi's visit to Syria is in line with efforts to reinforce the axis of resistance in West Asia, including in the occupied territories, Lebanon and Syria itself. This should be seen against the backdrop of Israel's weakening position in the region, as the regime is gripped by turmoil inside and facing mounting resistance outside. Iran and Syria are both under Western economic sanctions. The restrictive measures, however, seem to be a blessing in disguise for both nations as they're resolute in overcoming economic hurdles by forming stronger bonds and relying on their own potentialities.
Now to Sudan, where fighting enters a fourth week as the warring parties are meeting in Saudi Arabia to hold their first round of direct talks. Khartoum is witnessing intense street battles while the army is pounding targets in the capital. Envoys of Sudan's army and paramilitary rapid support forces, also known as the RSF, are now in the Saudi port city of Jeddah for talks. The two sides have reached multiple truces over the past weeks, but none of them have been respected. The truce talks, brokered by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, come while the army and the RSF have made it clear that they would only discuss a humanitarian ceasefire. The fighting has derailed an internationally backed plan to usher in civilian rule following years of unrest and uprisings in the African country. And with that, it brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Salutations to the immortal saints of Ray. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to a special program on the occasion of the passing away of a special person, whose holy shrine in Ray, which is an important site of pilgrimage, makes him the prime saint of the Iranian capital Tehran, to the extent that people call him Shah or King. In fact, the spiritual king who continues to govern hearts and souls. Stay tuned, please. Peace unto the virtuous and obedient slave of Allah, the Lord of the universe, of his messenger, the Prophet of Islam, and the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. Peace unto you, O Abul Qasim, the offspring of the Prophet's noble grandson, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him. Peace upon you. Ziyarat, or visitation to whose shrine, has the reward of the ziyarat to the shrine of the Chief of Martyrs, Imam Hussein. It is obvious we are not saluting any ordinary person. The above passages indicate that our salutation is to a dignified member of the blessed progeny of the Almighty's last and greatest emissary to mankind with the universal message of Islam. To be more precise, these are among the passages that tens of thousands of pilgrims are reciting today on Shawwal 15th. In fact, since last night, while visiting the shrine of this virtuous person in what was once the historical city of Ray, now a southern suburb of Tehran, commemorate the anniversary of his departure from the mortal world. Based on the fourth month of Rabiul Akhir, in the Prophet's city Medina, in the year 1173 AH, he was fifth in descent from Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him, and was named Abdul Azim. He grew up into a scholar of repute and had the honor of companionship of three of the Prophet's 12 divinely designated infallible heirs, Imam Ali Reza, Imam Muhammad Taqi al-Jawad, and Imam Ali al-Naqi al-Hadi, peace upon them. He is among the early erudite scholars who collected, in book form, several eloquently wise sermons of the gateway of the City of Knowledge, Imam Ali, peace upon him, and titled it Khutab Amirul Mu'minin, 150 years before Sayyid Razi was to compile the famous book Nahjul Balagha and include many of them in it. He was, however, not an armchair scholar, but an active missionary for spreading in society the genuine teachings of Islam, especially in Iran, where he settled in those days of severe persecution of the followers of the Ahlul Bayt by Mutawakkil, that most infidel ruler of the usurper Abbasid dynasty of self-styled caliphs. No wonder his services to humanity and the continued homage being paid to him for the past millennium and two centuries by the grateful people of Iran, who reverently address him as Shah or King, though he did not possess any kingdom, but has continued to rule the hearts of believers throughout the world for the past millennium and two centuries. This is testimony to one of the famous sayings of his illustrious ancestor, the Prophet's vicegerent, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. Those who amass wealth are actually dead, even though they may be living, while those endowed with knowledge will remain as long as the world exists. This wonderful aphorism means that the truly knowledgeable scholars are alive in the hearts of the faithful, even though they are not physically present in our midst. According to the famous Iranian scholar Sheikh Sadur, who lived 1,000 years ago, once Abdul Azim asked Imam Ali an-Naqi al-Hadi, peace upon him, the Prophet's 10th infallible heir, peace upon him. O son of Allah's Messenger, I wish to present to you my beliefs. If they are correct, then I will affirm and adhere to them till I meet Allah, the Great and the Exalted. I affirm Allah, blessed and exalted, is one. There is nothing like Him. He is beyond the two limits, that is, the limit of negation and annulment of attributes, and the limit of anthropomorphism, and He has neither a body nor a form, nor dimension nor a material core. Rather, He is the one who creates bodies and gives forms, the creator of dimensions and matter, lord of everything and its possessor, creator and originator. And I affirm Muhammad is His servant, His messenger, and the seal of prophets. There is no prophet after Him till the day of judgment. And I affirm after Him the Imam, the Caliph, and the guardian of the affair of guidance is Amirul Mu'minin Ali ibn Abi Talib, and then Hassan, then Hussein, then Ali ibn al-Hussein Zainul Abidin, then Muhammad ibn Ali al-Baqir, then Ja'far ibn Muhammad al-Sadiq, then Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim, then Ali ibn Musa al-Riza, then Muhammad ibn Ali al-Taqi al-Jawad, and thereafter, you, my master. Imam Hadi, peace upon him, nodded in the affirmative and elaborated, and after me will be my son, Al-Hassan al-Askari. However, I wonder how the people will react with regards to his successor. Abdul Azim says, I asked, why do you say that, O Master? The 10th Imam replied, because none will see his person during the long period of occultation, nor will it be permissible to mention his name till he reappears to fill the earth with justice and equity as it was previously filled with oppression and tyranny. Abdul Azim narrates, so I responded, I accept what you have informed me, and I maintain that their friend is the friend of Allah, their enemy is the enemy of Allah. Obedience to them is obedient to Allah. Disobedience to them is disobedience to Allah. I maintain that the Prophet's Mi'raj, or ascension to the highest point in the heavens and back to planet Earth in a fraction of a night, did occur. That questioning in the grave will happen, that heaven and hell exist, that a counting of deeds will occur, and that the hour will undoubtedly arrive when Allah will resurrect those in the graves. I further maintain that the religious obligations after velayat, love and adherence to the Ahlul Bayt, are the ritual prayers, the zakat levy, fasting in the month of Ramadan, Hajj, pilgrimage to the symbolic house of God, the holy Kaaba in Mecca, jihad, striving in the path of Allah, enjoining good, amr bi ma'ruf, and discouraging evil, nahy anil munkar. On hearing this, the 10th Imam said, O Abul Qasim, by Allah, what you have mentioned is the religion which Allah has chosen for your servants and one with which He is satisfied. So adhere to it. May Allah keep you steadfast on the established faith in this world and in the hereafter. Sheikh Saduq, who compiled the book on Sayyid Abdul Azim titled Jame Akhbar Abd al-Azim, has narrated that a man from Ray came to Imam Hadi, peace upon him, in Samarra in Iraq in those days of severe persecution of the followers of Ahlul Bayt and said, I have visited the holy shrine of Imam Hussein, peace upon him. The Imam replied, If one visits Abdul Azim al-Hassani's tomb near you, it would be as if he has visited Imam Hussein, peace upon him, in Karbala. Let us join the multitude of pilgrims streaming to the sprawling golden domed shrine in Ray for a worthy salutation to the prime saint of Tehran by saying, Peace unto you. May Allah grant us your companionship in paradise. Gather us in your company. Guide us to your prophet's fountain and make us drink of your ancestors' cup through the hand of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
The topic that I have chosen, as I had mentioned last night, was to talk about some of the companions of Amir al-Mu'mineen, to understand what does it mean to be the Shia of Ali. And last night we started with the example of Salman al-Farsi. There's quite a lot to say about him. And even tonight I would not be able to complete. Salman, his journey in seeking the truth was a long one. Zoroastrian background, traveling all the way to Sham, which was a Christian country, becoming Christian, getting close to these monks, and some of them who actually were sharing their secrets with him. The information that they had, they would not share with the public. And this is where we come to realize when Quran says that, you know, that Ahmad, the name of Rasulullah in the Torah and Injil, has been written in such a way that they know him the way they know their own children. The details of Rasulullah. But this were not public knowledge. These leaders of the church would just hide it. Or even the Yahud. The presence of the Jewish tribes in Medina was because of the prediction that they had in their books that the last prophet will be settling in that city. But when he came, they realized he's not one of us. And so they started opposing him. And so this is how Salman came to know about Rasulullah and even the characteristics, the example I mentioned yesterday. Then he was told that this last prophet would not take anything if you give him a sadaqah. It's haram for him and for Banu Hashim. And so these things were known to Salman. And appreciating his quest for truth, his journey in search of truth, Rasulullah described his, you know, attempt in a very beautiful way, where he says, "Law kana ad-din fi as-surayya lanalahu Salman." If the true faith was in the stars, Salman would have gone all the way to the stars to go and reach to that level to find what is the truth. Amir al-Mu'mineen describes Salman when somebody asked him, and this is after the wafat of Salman, where he says, "You're talking to me about Salman, you're asking me, Imra'un minna, he was one of us. Wa ilayna ahlul bayt, he was attached to the ahlul bayt. Wa man lakum bimithli luqman al-hakim, who was there in the ummah besides him like Luqman al-hakim?" You know Luqman? This person blessed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with special knowledge, that even you have his story mentioned in the Quran. Ali says Salman was the Luqman of the Muslim Ummah. عَلِمَ الْعِلْمُ الْعَوَّلُ وَالْآخِرُ وَقَرَأَ الْكِتَابُ الْأَوَّلُ الْكِتَابُ الْآخِرُ. He knew the knowledge of the previous religions and the last one. He was familiar with the scriptures of the earlier religions and the last one. وَكَانَ بَحْرًا لَا يُنْزَفْ. He was the ocean of knowledge which will never end. This is the status of Salman in the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam. Yesterday I quoted to you the statement of the sixth Imam, that this level of Salman, the respect that the Ahlul Bayt have for him, the very first reason was that he sacrificed his own desires and wish and preferred whatever Ali wanted. And that is the path that we have to follow. He was among those who refused to do the bay'at to the first Khalifa. As I said yesterday, he was in the house of Fatima with about 12 to 14 people who were refusing to do bay'at to Abu Bakr until they were forced, you know, taken out by force and forced to do bay'at other than Ali. And he was among the few who was there even in the janazah of Bibi Fatima. And these are the words of Ali. He says that he was there. He, Abu Zar, Miqdad, Ammar. On the third day after the wafat of Rasulullah, Salman actually stood up to publicly support Ali in a speech that he made to the Muslims at that time, where he says, "Ala ayyuhan nas, isma'u anni hadithi." O people, listen to me. Try to understand me. And I tell you that I have given quite a lot as far as ilm is concerned from Rasulullah. And if I narrate to you the virtues of Amir al-Mu'mineen, a group of you will say he's Majnoon, he's crazy. Other will say he's a liar, and they will pray for my murder. If somebody comes and kill me, they will say, you know, may Allah bless that fellow. Means you will not accept my words that easily about the fazail of Ali. But now that you are already into disgrace and bala, remember, إِنَّ عِنْدَ عَلِيٍ عِلْمُ الْمَنَايَ وَالْبَلَايَ. Ali has the knowledge about all different situations. He is the final word. He knows about the background of the people. أَلَا مِنْ حَاجِ حَارُونَ بِنْ عِمْرَانَ مِنْ مُوسَى. His position is same as the position of Harun in relation to Musa. The way the Prophet himself said to Ali, أَنْتَ وَسِي فِي أَهْلِ بَيْتِي. You are my wasi, the executor of my will in my family, wa khalifati fi ummati, and you are my successor in my ummah. وَعَنْتَ مِنِّي بِمَنْزِلَةِ هَارُونَ مِنْ مُوسَى. Your position is same as the position of Harun to Musa. Then he says, Salman says, but you people have become like Bani Israel. Bani Israel, described in the Quran, they went against the teachings of Musa alayhi salam. And this is where he goes on to say that if you had accepted Ali as your leader, لَأَكَلْتُمْ مِنْ فَوْقِكُمْ وَمِنْ تَحْتِ أَقْدَامِكُمْ. You will be eating, or you will become rich from things coming from the sky and the things coming out from the earth. But you are now deprived of these blessings because you did not accept Ali. أَصِبْتُمُ الْخَيْرُ وَلَكِنْ أَخْطَعْتُمُ الْمَعْدَنِ. You took a little bit of the gold, but you forgot the gold mine. You forgot Ali. He is the gold mine for you. And this is where you have to realize that now that this has happened to you, you are going to suffer because of it.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyum. وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. The U.S. has boosted its military presence at Mexico border. The move comes days after the White House authorized the use of reserve troops to combat the international drug trade. The decision to boost the number of troops at the border comes as Title 42 is set to expire on May 11th. Title 42 was put in place during the coronavirus pandemic to allow the authorities to quickly expel migrants who try to cross the border. Once the policy expires, officials expect to see a large increase in the number of migrants attempting to enter the U.S. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Guardian, officials are bracing for the end of Title 42, which allows the U.S. to expel non-Mexican migrants without a chance to seek asylum.
Joe Biden will send 1,500 troops to the U.S.-Mexico border, the Pentagon said recently, in preparation for a possible rise in immigration when COVID-19 border restrictions lift later this month. The 90-day deployment of active duty troops will supplement the work of the U.S. Border Patrol, but will not carry out law enforcement duties, said Brigadier General Pat Ryder, a Pentagon spokesperson, in a statement. The force will be in addition to an ongoing deployment of about 2,500 National Guard troops. The deployment comes as Title 42 restrictions, which allow U.S. authorities to rapidly expel non-Mexican migrants to Mexico without the chance to seek asylum, are set to end on May 11th. Donald Trump activated the policies during the pandemic, and Biden had expanded the controversial public health measure despite criticism from immigration advocates. Biden has grappled with record numbers of migrants caught illegally crossing the U.S.-Mexico border since he took office in 2021. Republicans have criticized Biden for rolling back the hardline policies of Donald Trump, which some Democrats and immigration activists also have lambasted Biden for gradually toughening his approach to border security. Pentagon leaders have long been frustrated about military deployments to the border, privately arguing that the mundane tasks are better suited for law enforcement agencies and can affect military readiness. Immigration advocates have criticized previous efforts to send troops to the border. Bilal Al-Askriar, the interim campaign manager of hashtag Welcome with Dignity campaign, said on Twitter, "People seeking asylum should be met with humanitarian professionals, welcoming volunteers, and medical and mental health professionals, not soldiers." According to RT, the U.S. military has said it will deploy 1,500 troops to the border with Mexico in order to fill critical capability gaps, saying additional manpower is needed due to personnel shortfalls at the Customs and Border Protection Agency, CBP. The Pentagon announced the decision recently after Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin approved a temporary deployment to assist CBP efforts at the southwestern border at the request of the Department of Homeland Security. Pentagon spokesperson Pat Ryder said in a statement, "For 90 days, these 1,500 military personnel will fill critical capability gaps, such as ground-based detection and monitoring, data entry, and warehouse support, until CBP can address these needs through contracted support," adding that military personnel will not directly participate in law enforcement activities. During a press briefing recently, Ryder noted that the troops would arrive at the border by May 10th and that they would be active duty troops from the Army and Marine Corps. However, he said the military is looking for ways to replace these deploying forces with reservists or National Guard personnel after 90 days are up in order to return those active duty forces back to their home stations. There are currently around 2,500 troops deployed at the border, most from the National Guard, who are assisting CBP with detection and monitoring and aviation support. The Pentagon spokesperson continued, asked whether the increased militarization at the border was in line with President Joe Biden's vows to overhaul U.S. immigration policy. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre argued the deployment was a common practice and stressed that military personnel will not be interacting with immigrants or migrants. Instead, by serving in other roles, she said the troops will free up Border Patrol agents to perform their critical law enforcement duties. Recently, Biden has issued an executive order authorizing Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas to use active duty ready reserve troops at the U.S.-Mexico border to fight the illegal drug trade, which he deemed an extraordinary threat to U.S. national security. The order came after the White House declared a national emergency in relation to international drug trafficking in 2021, handing the president additional powers to address the issue. A number of Biden's Republican rivals, including 2024 hopeful and former President Donald Trump, have also proposed military solutions to problems at the border. In March, a group of 20 GOP lawmakers put forward a bill that would designate various drug cartels as foreign terrorist organizations, while the Senate has proposed similar legislation as well as a dedicated task force to take on drug gangs.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of the speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei in a meeting with Iranian officials and the ambassadors of Islamic countries on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr on April 22, 2023. If the Islamic nation, which consists of about 2 billion, close to 2 billion people, who are scattered in the most important sensitive geographical areas of the world, if they were united today, Islamic countries would receive more blessings, far more blessings. If this unity is established to any extent, the solution to the problems of the Islamic world would become apparent. The first step will become apparent and it will be possible for us to solve the problems of the Islamic world. The Islamic world is facing many problems now. It is faced with differences, conflicts, bloodshed, dependence on others, poverty, and a lack of knowledge. These are problems in the Islamic nation. If we become closer to one another, not only will solving these problems become possible, it will also be easy to do. The issue of Palestine is currently one of the most fundamental issues of the Islamic world. Even if it's not at the top of the issues, it is at least one of the top problems of the Islamic world.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Praise God, today we are witnessing the gradual decline of the usurping Zionist regime. Everyone in the world is seeing this. The usurping regime is gradually declining, and the rate of its decline is increasing every day. This decline started some years ago, but the rate of its decline has increased. This is a very big opportunity. The Palestinian issue is not just an Islamic issue, it is a humanitarian issue. If anyone in the world, regardless of whether they are Muslim or not, knows the reality of the events in Palestine, they will confront the usurping Zionist regime. Some of the crimes of the usurping regime, the Israeli regime that is, and some of the catastrophes that they had created became apparent to the world this year. You saw how the people's gatherings and walks on Quds Day were no longer limited to the Islamic world. Many people outside the Islamic world, even in Europe and in America itself, also took part in the walks in defense of the Palestinian people. This is how it is. It is a humanitarian issue. What is it that makes a European person, whose government is attached to and dependent on the Zionist regime, chant in the streets in favor of the Palestinians and against the Zionist regime? This is a very important matter. Why has it become like this? It is because of the Palestinian people's resistance.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.